Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra in association with the Reading Post for Friday, October the 24th. My name is Dan Wimish and I'm the editor of thetarlhurstend.com, an independent Reading fan site, and I'm joined once again by Get Reading's Reading reporter, Charles Watts. Charles, how are you?
I'm very well, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not so bad, thanks. It's been a while since we spoke. We last spoke just before Reading headed off to Griffin Park. And since then, it's not been good. Let's cut to the chase. Three games, they've lost them all, and they've conceded three in each. So are you at panic stations yet?
I don't know about panic stations. It's certainly not been good. I agree with you on that one. And I asked a question after that. I think the second goal went in, maybe the third goal went in on Bournemouth. When does this become a crisis? And a lot of people were replying saying now. Others were saying after Saturday. And I do feel like Saturday could well be the tipping point in terms of sort of the general consensus of what's going on. Hide into nothing, bottom club. If things go wrong there at home, then I think we could be looking at crisis. But no, I mean, there's no getting around the fact it's simply not been good enough the last few games. Goals are flying in all over the place. Confidence is visibly shot. And I think the thing that disappoints most people, especially at Bournemouth, was it just seemed like the players sort of waved the white flag once the first goal went in. And that was really disappointing.
Absolutely. I mean, I wrote up on the Tarlhurst End why I'm not panicking yet. And for me, I guess I can't excuse any of the performances. I think they've been appalling, especially defence. And I'm sure we'll come on to that. But for me, it's a case of expectation. And when you actually look at that 11, they could be playing... Obviously, they should be playing a bit better, but that isn't a top six side out there, yet alone a top two side. And I think it's just maybe time for people to adjust their expectations. Yeah, it should be better, but at the end of the day, it's a very young and inexperienced defence. And with confidence as fragile as it is and the squad situation with the injuries, you know, what can Nigel Atkins do? Who's he got to replace them with?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think at the start of the season, the expectations were very much it was going to be a mid-table to... bottom half of mid-table season. I think everyone was kind of predicting that. No one was predicting top six or anything like that. But obviously now it's actually seems to be happening. And, you know, Reading are 17th and they're losing games. It's just not nice to watch for fans. No matter even if you predicted it, it's not nice to see your team capitulate and get beaten week in, week out. So I'm not surprised that people are upset and angry. But like you say, I think you've got to take everything into account and realise that this season, Reading just aren't going to get promoted. It's not going to happen unless something dramatic happens. You know, we get the injured players back, somehow staying in around it before January, and then the Ties suddenly lavish some money on Nigel Atkins and we have a Brian McDermott tight run, which, let's face it, is probably not going to happen. So I think we're just going to have to accept that this is the season ahead. It's going to be inconsistent. There's going to be plenty of defeats and you're going to be sort of fighting around the wrong stage of this, the wrong part of the table.
Do you think has Nigel Atkins done anything in this sort of spell to, I don't know, lessen your faith in him? Do you think he's under any genuine pressure? I know we ran a poll on the site and I think it was less than 10% want him to go now, with about another 15% saying he should go if they lose to Blackpool. So it seems as if the fans are behind. But, I mean, what was the atmosphere you felt down at Dean Court on Tuesday night?
No, the atmosphere was all right. I mean, the Bournemouth fans were having a right go and chance of you getting sacked in the morning and everything like that. But the Reading fans, they didn't stop singing the whole way through. It was a really good atmosphere. Even long after the final whistle, they were still chanting away. So they certainly enjoyed themselves. And then you saw people leaving early and people were angry and chanting. But it wasn't anything that doesn't happen when you see your team lose 3-0. There was no Atkins out or anything like that. I think the majority still want Atkins to stay, still want him to turn it around. But, you know, he says it himself all the time. It's a results business. And at the moment, they're not getting results. And the longer that this goes on, it's just inevitable that the scrutiny falls on him and the pressure will only increase the longer this run goes on. He needs a win and he needs a win quickly, because if he doesn't, we all know what happens in football. It's just the norm. We've got new owners in. We don't know, A, how patient they are. We don't know, B, who's got the finger on the trigger either. I mean, who makes those sort of decisions now at Reading? It's an absolute mystery who would actually take a decision of that magnitude. Is it a majority thing? Is it one person? Does Sir John still have any sort of input at all into those sort of footballing decisions? So who knows? But no, I mean, I don't want to see Atkins go. I want to see him given time to turn things around. But I think, like I said earlier, we know it's inevitable that if he doesn't get results, then at some point, he's going to have to dodge a bullet.
I've just got the imagery now in my head of Atkins stood in front of a load of video screens with people in Thailand sat in front of some sort of Bond-esque situation.
But it is a real
trap door.
It's an interesting point, though, isn't it? I mean, who makes these decisions? Is it we were told that Tsushima was the head of this consortium once Samrit suddenly mysteriously disappeared out of all equations. Suddenly Tsushima was the head of this consortium. Then suddenly when the details get released, she's got half the shares of someone else. And so, I mean, does this guy, he's got 50%, I can't even say his name, does he make the decision? I mean, do we even know who he is? Has anyone seen him? And, you know,
Sir John's still co-chairman, so...
Exactly, and so does he have any sort of say in it? It's just really bizarre. I mean, I don't know where these big decisions are made or how they're made. So it's certainly one to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. Well, fingers crossed it alleviates the pressure with a big win against Blackpool. And we'll come on to that game shortly. But there was some good news. I mean, throughout this podcast, we've been bemoaning the injury list. But it finally seems as if it's actually getting good again. And I understand there was a few players that joined in with the training game this week.
I know. Can you believe it? I mean, as I'm saying this, I'm trying to find the nearest bit of furniture to touch some wood because at the moment they're looking good, and we might even see Danny Guthrie play tomorrow out the four that returned. Obviously, they were Anton Ferdinand, Gareth McCleary, Danny Williams, and Danny Guthrie all took part in a sort of 45-minute training match with the group. You know, full contact, everything, full pace. So I mean, that's brilliant news. Jem, not quite. He took part in training, but he didn't take part in the game. He's not quite there yet, but he's only about a couple of weeks behind, according to Nigel Atkins. So, I mean, geez, imagine suddenly chucking those five into the squad, into the team. It's a massive boost. It's a massive boost to the manager. It's a massive boost to the fans. It's a massive boost to the players, just seeing these five suddenly integrated back into the changing room. So, yeah, I mean, it's great. It's great news. They all came through that match fine, Nigel Atkins said. Glenn Murray, even, who sat out Tuesday's game, he played in that as well and is fine for tomorrow. So I think there's another under-21s game on Monday at Brighton that I wouldn't be surprised to see some of these guys playing in. And Nigel suggested they might do another sort of behind-closed-door type thing later on in the week just to keep the game time coming. So, I mean, you look at Blackburn, what, a week tomorrow, and, you know, could we be seeing some of these lads then? Let's hope so.
Being a very, very welcome boost. And speaking of reinforcements as well, Nigel Atkins in his post-match the other day was saying that he needs to change something with that defence that has been so porous. And obviously the internal options aren't great. I mean, there's Jake Cooper, who's not done a lot wrong, but he's still very raw. Stephen Kelly's come back, but has Chris Gunter done enough to lose his place? And we've seen what he's like at left back. So is he an answer? So there's not a lot of internal options, but can you see Atkins going into the loan market, and has there been any movement in that?
Well, he's been saying it for a week now and still nothing's happened. I mean, I was pushing on it again yesterday at the training ground, and I mean, he wasn't even ruling out the possibility of someone arriving in time to play on Saturday's game. He wasn't, you know, he didn't say it was definitely going to happen, but he said, so is it a possibility? And he said, well, yes, it is a possibility. They're trying hard. He says Nick Hammond's doing what he does, and they're trying hard, but he's just refusing. He says he will not sign someone just for the sake of it, and he says it's quite difficult at this time because the only players that are available are either players who are out of the team somewhere, maybe in the Premier League, they're out of the side, and so are they up to speed? He says, but you need someone to come in and change things now. He doesn't want to get someone who's got to take 3 weeks to get up to speed before he can use them. And there's not many of them around, he says. So, and I said, I put it to him because I saw Millwall got Andy Wilkinson, I think, didn't they?
From Stoke.
From Stoke. And I said, well, you know, what about him? I mean, he was available. He's an experienced defender. Surely he could have come in and helped. And he sort of kind of shrugged and didn't really answer, as he tends to do when you actually put names to him. But he obviously seems like he didn't fancy him. But so there are players. There are players there. But he says he's not going to do it for the sake of it. He has to bring someone in who, A, he can use straight away, and B, he thinks he's actually going to improve the team.
Yeah, well, on the presumption that this mysterious loan signing doesn't materialise in terms of ahead of tomorrow's game with Blackpool, I mean, what sort of changes can you see him making? Do you think there will be changes to that back four? I just mentioned a couple of names like Cooper and Kelly. Could one or both of them come into the mix?
I just can't see it. I mean, that's the thing. We keep talking about defence conceding goals, and it's been poor. You know, there's no getting around the fact, but I mean, with those options available, is Stephen Kelly better than Chris Gunter, who's captain at the moment? I just can't see that change happening. And as well as Jake Cooper's done, and like I said, he hasn't really put a foot wrong. I think, is this a time, seven games without a win, you know, when, let's face it, if something goes wrong tomorrow, or they concede an early goal, we could get quite nasty down in the ground. Is that the time for a young lad to be thrown in? I'm just not sure. I think I wouldn't be surprised if we see the same back five, including Feds. And you know, it seems mad to think it, considering they're shipping goals left, right and centre, but he just doesn't have any real options to change things internally.
Yeah, further forward then, you said the Glenn Murray should be fit and you'd imagine he'll come straight back into the team. What did you make of Pavel Pogrebniak's omission at Bournemouth? What does that say about Nigel Atkins' faith in him?
I know he's obviously, he's certainly fallen way down the pecking order. Pavis, I don't think you can get away from the fact. It actually made me laugh that he brought him on for the last 6 minutes at Bournemouth. I mean, was he really going to make a difference in 6 minutes? It was a nothing substitute. I thought.
The guy that did our player ratings gave him a generous 1 out of 10.
Did he? Best substitutes
appearances he's ever seen.
I gave him 3, so I was obviously being kind, but. I mean, it was just a bizarre substitution, I thought. You know, if you do that, do it when the third goal goes in, so at least give him 20 minutes to try and do something to get his head on the ball, to do something. But to chuck him on for the last 6 minutes, it was a bizarre sub. I thought it was just kind of doing something for the sake of it. So, he's obviously well down the pecking order. I think Glenn Murray will come straight back in the side. I would be getting Hal Robson-Kanu out the side, and I'd probably play Cox and Mackie. No, Cox and I'd probably play Blackman. I think behind Glenn Murray. I'd go back with the three. I was really surprised by his formation at Bournemouth. I mean, he went again with just two central midfielders in Norwood and Akpan, and then he had the four, which I just don't think fit the four of Robson-Kanu, Mackie, Cox, and Blackman. And he did it again the previous week against Derby as well. We just had, I think it was Taylor and Norwood in there. And they were just outnumbered in those central positions. And as soon as I saw the team, I thought it was going to happen. You think back to Bournemouth last year, and it was exactly
wingers.
The same thing. They got completely overrun in the central positions, I thought. And it just happened again. It didn't in the first half because Bournemouth was so poor. But once they got going in the second half, Fred had no answer. And there were just constant waves going through at the defence. And I would go back to playing, even against Blackpool, I would go back to having sort of three midfielders, take one of those attackers out and probably bring Jake Taylor back in and have Norwood, Taylor and Akpan in the side. Because I was interested, I was talking to AD Williams about this yesterday, and AD was saying even against Blackpool now, for him the most important thing tomorrow is keeping a clean sheet.
Absolutely.
And he would completely just tighten things up. He said even if it was a 0-0, he said just keeping a clean sheet to get the confidence back in some of those defenders would be the most important thing to him. And so he would certainly sacrifice attacking threat just to tighten things up and just make sure they don't concede a goal.
Okay, well, time to put our money where our mouth is. In our ongoing prediction league, I think myself and you were joint second behind Johnny from the main podcast. He leads it. All four of us, myself, you, Westy and Johnny, all predicted defeats at Bournemouth. I can tell you that if you haven't listened to the main edition of the show, we've all gone the other way this week. As much as I hated to uniformly predict a win, we've all gone for wins. So I went for a 1-0, Johnny went for a 3-1 win, and Westy went for a 4-1 Reading win. So what are you going to say, Charles?
I'm going to say 1-0.
You're going to say 1-0, okay, lone descent. That's good, because whenever we all predict one thing, it very rarely tends to happen, unless it's a negative.
I saw they were 66-1 to win 5-1 again against Blackpool. So worth a five. I didn't think they suddenly explode back to form with five goals and repeat last season's game.
Well, Blackpool are the worst team in the league.
Yes, they are. But they've conceded four less goals than Reading.
Yeah, well, you couldn't ask for a better fixture, really. I know there's no easy game in the Championship. No, I really think you need a team that hasn't shown a lot of teeth. They're not the most poorest side in the world, but they're not teams that are going to score a lot of goals. And Reading will stay in the game no matter what happens.
I think Reading are going to hide into nothing with this one. I really do. I think everyone is going there. Like you said there, you've all predicted wins. I think everyone is going to that stadium expecting Reading to end this run and get a win. And I'm just not sure it's going to be as simple as that. They're so lacking in confidence. And if they can see the first goal tomorrow, I think they're going to have a real... they're going to have a real struggle, because confidence is shot and the crowd will start getting on their back. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but I'd almost prefer a mid-table side than a team that everyone expects Reading to be.
The only thing, the only positive I can come is that Nigel Atkins' teams very, very rarely seem to lose when they score the first goal. That they've drawn a couple, but it's very rare, going back to last season as well, that they actually lost when scoring the first goal. So I think if they do get that goal, and I said it's not exactly the most cohesive Blackpool team, I think it'll be okay. But yeah, I do dread that thought of Reading going behind.
Yeah, I spoke to the Blackpool reporter at the Blackpool Gazette yesterday, and he was telling me about the game. So they haven't been destroyed at all in any game this season, apart from Huddersfield, which they ended up losing 4-2. I think they went 3-0 down after 15 minutes. So that was the only game that they really got done. They very rarely concede more than, or lose by more than a goal. I think they've only lost by a couple of goals a few times. He says they're pretty tight defensively, and they never get completely overrun. But he, like I've said about Reading, he said if they concede the first goal, they look beat. And so it's so important, that first goal tomorrow. It's vital. I think certainly whoever gets that will win.
Well, fingers crossed that happens, because I don't think I can bear coming into the main edition of the show early next week and talking about another defeat. It's just not good for my health.
It's not good for anyone's health, I don't think.
Absolutely not. Well, that just about wraps up the show this week. I said you can follow Charles' latest writings over on the Get Reading website and in the paper. And are you web chatting again on Wednesday?
Yes, yeah. Hopefully we have a happier one than it was this week, because there was a lot of miserable people on there.
Yeah, social media is never a fun place after a 3-0 beating, especially when you've had multiple ones. But yeah, so head over to getreading.co.uk. Also head over to thetilesn.com for plenty more fan opinion analysis. And also, if you like this show, go subscribe over on iTunes, leave us a review. It's always nice and helpful. And as I said, if you subscribe to this show, you'll get it automatically downloaded, as well as the main edition of the show, which should return Monday or Tuesday. We'll keep you updated on the Twitter feed. But Charles, thanks very much for joining us. And hopefully here's the 3 points on Saturday.
Yeah, no worries.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Tilehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.